The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day. What's in your wallet?
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
If the Power Five conferences break away from the NCAA, what rises in its place? Are we simply to assume it's the ACC, it's the SEC, it's the Big 12 and the Big 10, it's the Pac-12 and everybody else? Or is there something different that forms? Something that is smaller and yet bigger. Something that aligns schools who are more similar than just being neighbors. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can join the conversation at 888-729-3776. Michael Hsu, a regent at the University of Minnesota, suggested that within the next couple of years, the Power Five conferences could break away from the NCAA. He suggested that schools that are major revenue-generating sports like those in the Power Five wouldn't want to be giving handouts and subsidizing other schools across the country. And that would mean they could break away to form their own governing body, their own league of college football teams. But as I heard that, and I thought about it, and I thought about why, I realized what this is about disparities. What this is about money. And what this is about is who gets and keeps their money. Now, Damian Woody was on the Will Cain Show a little bit earlier, and he said, the reason we're having this conversation now is because of this pandemic and the loss of revenue to colleges. All of a sudden, everybody's keeping their own pocketbooks a little bit tighter. And he's right. And Notre Dame athletic director Jack Swarbrick said on a Zoom conference call, this is only going to expand and highlight the disparities among programs in college sports. Listen.
There'll be great disparities, I think, that are inevitable in this. The NCAA will do what it can, I think, to regulate them. But you're still going to have circumstances where schools aren't open and others are, or states haven't reopened and some have. I think the bigger challenge for us is the consequence that that will have on competing in the fall. It's one thing to say that one team gets a competitive advantage. It's another to say, what are the circumstances under which you can play? You know, what's the record consequence of someone deciding they can't play or having a week they can't play because of an outbreak?
And more than that, what's the financial disparity that comes from conferences and schools that can play and those that cannot? You see, what this is about is, at least on the surface, the belief that Power Five conference schools are more powerful wealthy than non-Power 5 conference schools. And it's true. But it masks over the fact that everybody within those Power 5 conference schools is not the same. Texas and Iowa State are not the same. Ohio State and Rutgers are not the same. And Alabama and Missouri are not the same. If we are doing away with all for one and one for all, if we're doing away with this cohesive idea of college football, what makes us think that conferences as we know of them now, Power Five included, will escape this fracturing? No, I can envision a world in which schools align not by geography, not by tradition, not by existing conferences, but schools align by common interest. And what the interest is driving this entire conversation right now is money. So ask yourself this. Who would the biggest money schools, biggest revenue generating athletic departments, biggest television rating garnering football programs want to align with? Who would they have the most in common with? Who would they be most mutually, beneficially in relationship with? Other big, wealthy TV generating programs. I think if the Power Five starts fracturing away from the NCAA and you begin this process, what you end up with at some point is a super conference. I think you end up with one big super league in college football. 20, 25 of the wealthiest, biggest, best, and most popular programs across the country joining in one conference together, where every single game, every single weekend has the potential for big ratings, where the television contracts would be through the roof. And most importantly, the spoils of those television contracts would be split evenly among schools who actually generate that revenue. One of the biggest problems in the whole conference television contracts was the Texas Longhorns wanting to negotiate their own separate from the Big 12. It's what sent Texas A&M away from the Big 12 into the SEC. It's what made everybody else in the Big 12 look at Texas with resentment. Texas's motivation was, we generate all the revenue, we generate all of the attention, the ratings, we want the money, and we have the power to do this. Everyone now is having the conversation in this pandemic, we're all starting to look out for number one, and everybody's looking at who really generates the money. It's not Power 5 schools, it's individual schools. How much of an extra burden do Georgia and Alabama and LSU and Auburn carry in the SEC? A big one. How about Ohio State and Michigan in the Big Ten? Do they generate an even amount as compared to Iowa and Minnesota? No, they do not. They generate more. So if everybody's starting to look out for number one, they're going to want to keep as much of that television revenue as possible. And aligning yourself with other schools who generate that same kind of revenue, that same type of eyeballs, is the best way to get your most return on your dollar. So think about that. Who's in and who's out? Which schools would want to join this kind of super league? I mean, I'm not just making this idea up, by the way. This has happened in European soccer. Nuno's a big soccer fan. I'm a pretty big soccer fan. There's been talk for several years now that the biggest clubs in the English Premier League, which, by the way, is fantastically wealthy and profitable. But the biggest clubs know they get the biggest eyeballs. They are the best. They generate more than other teams in the 20-team English Premier League. Same thing with La Liga in Spain and Serie A in Italy and the Bundesliga in Germany. And the two or three biggest teams in each of those leagues have openly talked about the idea of joining forces and creating one European Super League. You'd have Barcelona and Real Madrid leaving their domestic league to join this conglomerate Super League. You'd have Bayern Munich and Dortmund out of Germany breaking away. You'd have the Milan teams and Juventus and whoever else in Italy breaking away. Three or four teams in every one. Manchester United, Manchester City, Liverpool, Tottenham breaking away in the English league. More than that, probably. And then all being in one big super league where the television contracts would be massive, the ratings huge, and every weekend you have a super game. Why wouldn't that happen in college football? Alabama, Michigan, Ohio State, Texas, USC, Florida. All in one big conference. 20, 25 teams. Maybe split up into divisions. 12-game schedule. How about that? How about that? 20 teams make it. Two 10-team divisions. You play your entire division. Then you play two or three teams from cross-division on a rotating basis. Then you got a Final Four and a championship game. There's a 14-game schedule right there, just like they have in college football. But this time, every single game is against a powerhouse. Every single game is huge. Every single game gets big television ratings. Every single game generates massive amounts of revenue for those programs. If we are pursuing self-interest, if we are pursuing biggest eyeballs, biggest revenue, why wouldn't a super league like that be the way to go? Heather Dinich, ESPN's college football senior writer, was on Get Up, and she threw some cold water on this idea that the Power Five conferences could break away from the NCAA. She said, just would be really, really hard. Listen.
People have to remember that the NCAA is made up of all of the schools, over 1,000 schools, three different divisions. They're the ones that make the rules. And look, the NCAA isn't going to be the only one that's broke. If we don't have a college football season, all of the schools, including Power Five schools, Alabama, LSU, they will be broke as well. Nobody's going to have any money. So I think it's a stretch. You got to remember the NCAA runs all of the other, besides football, those conference championships, those rules, those regulations, that's a lot to unravel. I'm not saying it's not realistic. I'm saying it's extremely difficult, and they are part of the membership. They are part of the people who make those rules in the NCAA. We're talking about name, image, and likeness, all of those things that are on the table, recruiting, transfer waivers. Those Power Five commissioners are power players in a lot of those decisions. Now, we see how college football works. That's the one sport where those Power Five conferences have pulled away and done their own thing. Works very well for them. So I'm not saying it couldn't work in every other sport additionally, but I do think that all of those conferences play a huge role in making the NCAA what it is.
And I think if we are going to do this, what we're probably talking about, if we're being really forward-looking, is the end of those conferences if they want to break away and moving towards one big super conference, a super league of college football. 20 to 25 teams of the biggest revenue generating, most popular, biggest stadium filling, biggest ratings drivers in all of college football. And then the only question is, if that happens, who's in and who's out? Because that's where I started this conversation. If the Minnesota Golden Gophers want to push for it, they better hope that they're in that kind of super conference if the fracturing starts. Is Minnesota in? Is Miami in? Is Nebraska in? I've got a list right here of who would be in and who would be out based upon biggest revenue generating programs over a rolling basis over 3 years in all of college football. That right there would be your super conference like in European soccer. I'll lay that out coming up on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like over-tipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Before the Last Dance, the documentary on the Chicago Bulls' final year of their dynasty from the 90s, was set to air, Michael Jordan reportedly was worried about the way it would make him look. There's some that are saying he had good reason to worry. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Jordan's intensity and hunger for basketball dominance stands in stark contrast to his mindset in the fall of 93 when he stunned the basketball world by walking away for a minor league baseball field. Famously known to use even the smallest slight imaginable to motivate himself when his NBA comeback in 95 fell short in the playoffs, he worked harder than ever to return to form. Episodes 7 and 8 of The Last Dance premiere this Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. Mike Sielski of the Philly Inquirer, a columnist who I follow pretty regularly, wrote an interesting column this week where he said Michael Jordan is finally showing everybody exactly who he is. And Mike is now on our phone lines right now. Mike, what's up, man?
Hey, Will, thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you on. So you wrote this column this week. It got my attention, and I was very interested in what you had to say. So what do you think Michael Jordan is showing everybody about who he really is?
Well, I think he's showing that he can't let go of a grudge, even though he ought to. I mean, from what I've seen of The Last Dance, it's very entertaining. It's very interesting. But I have a real problem with the way, in particular, that Jordan has kind of been framing Jerry Krause. I don't mean to suggest Jerry Krause was perfect by any regards, but as I wrote in my column, I kind of have an issue with the fact that Krause has been dead for 3 years and is not around to defend himself and seems to be being used as a punching bag throughout, you know, most of what I've seen in The Last Dance so far.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder where that grudge goes back to. I believe I read something written by Jerry Krause from before, obviously, he died in 2016, and he seemed to think it goes back to Michael Jordan wanting to play on that injury we saw in a couple of the early episodes in the documentary, and Krause telling him that he couldn't. He wanted to preserve Jordan's long-term career, and Jordan said, I feel good. I want to do that. And Jordan contends that Krause said, you're an employee, kind of, you'll do what you're told. And Krause said, that's not That's not. But it sounds like that's where he thought it went bad. But it clearly was bad all the way throughout. You can see it in the documentary, not just in the interviews, right? But in real time as he insults Krause all the time.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, episode after episode, incident after incident, you know, whether it's after the game six of the 92 finals where he says he's lighting up a victory cigar and tells Krause you can't have one of these, it'll stunt your growth. You know, he's making fun of him at practice. He's, you know, the last episode, I guess it was, he's pounding away at him for, you know, traveling over to Europe to scout and keep an eye on Tony Kukoc and try to sign him and do the things that I think a general manager is kind of supposed to do. And I think one of the things that kind of irks me in this, Will, is that, you know, Krause is such an easy target. I mean, just look at him in these shots we see of him. I mean, he's, you know, compare him to Michael Jordan. It's almost like a popularity contest. And again, I don't mean right. to suggest that Krause was every bit as responsible for the six championships in 8 years as Michael Jordan was, but he just makes such an easy target, and that's so convenient. You know, it's narrative building instead of here's what actually happened back then. And again, go back to what we talked about earlier. You know, I just wonder why Jordan can't let this go. I mean, the guy's 3 years dead. He can't defend himself. And here's Michael still kicking him.
Mike Sielski of the Philly Inquirer here on the Will Cain Show. I agree with you 100%. I like how you said that. It's narrative building. It's not truth telling. It's not actually what happened. Because Krause is such a convenient and simple villain, I like how you say it's even physical, right? I mean, here he is. He's short. He's overweight. Jordan is tall. He's attractive. He looks like a demigod compared to Jerry Krause. He becomes an easy hero. And of course, he's Michael Jordan. I mean, at this point, the myth is already built up, and the myth is rooted in reality as well. I mean, Jordan was otherworldly. But Krause was extremely instrumental in building that thing. And we've talked about here on the Will Cain Show, the trades he made, the draft picks he made, everything. The coaches he picked, the coaches he fired, the offensive system that he put in place. He was more than integral. He was a centerpiece of building that dynasty. You, I think, in your column brought this up. Many people have since. Jordan, beyond just the Krause thing, Krause came up, but Jordan's Hall of Fame speech. It's interesting. Like, you know, the idea that Jordan is showing us who he really is, he kind of has been all along, right? He's been bitter. I don't even want to say since he retired, because it was probably there while he was playing as well. But through this documentary and through that Hall of Fame speech, you do see that Michael Jordan had a, I don't know what the right way to characterize, it's not just an edge, it's something more, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I don't look at the two as being mutually exclusive, right? I mean, you know, I think you've talked about this on your show, too. I'm sure, and, you know, everybody who has covered Jordan or known Jordan can testify to this, that anger, that turning of your competitor into an enemy, regarding him as a terrible human being almost, whether it's Jerry Krause or Isaiah Thomas, you know, that fuels him. That made him the player that he was. Mm-hmm. But when you get inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame and you're calling people out and settling scores, that moment to me, that opened my eyes back then in 2009 when I watched that speech and thought, holy cow, like, you know, Michael, let it go. You know, this is supposed to be the time where you show some grace and some graciousness and some class. And he couldn't do it then. And I think The Last Dance is kind of revealing that, you know, as you said, he can't do it now. And that to me is just striking because, as I pointed out in the column, nobody refers to those six championships as teams in 8 years as the Jerry Krause Bulls. They're the Michael Jordan Bulls. Everybody knows who he is. Everybody knows what he did. He doesn't have to step on Jerry Krause all over again. He's already got the status, and yet he can't let go.
We're not psychologists, you and I. Why do you think that is? He just can't turn that off? That same thing we both agree fueled him. He can't turn it off when the competing days are over?
I guess. I mean, you know, I don't know him well enough to take that kind of guess at why he is wired that way. It's clear that he is. I don't think anybody can doubt that. And I wonder at some point, hasn't anybody said to him, Michael, come on? Like, or has he allowed anyone to say that to him?
Oh, you can't.
Or if someone has tried, he just says, hell with you. I don't know.
Right. Charles Barkley was on a lot of things over the last couple of days, but he was asked about his personal relationship with Jordan. And what really he says set it in the wrong direction was him saying that Jordan had put too many suck-ups, kiss-asses around him in management, and that's why no one was there to check Jordan as when he was running a basketball franchise. And I'm sure that's not a Jordan issue. That's a fame issue, and Jordan was at the heights of fame, right? That's a power issue. You're surrounded by people who want to tell you, yes, that's correct, that's right. I doubt Jordan has anybody that could tell him what you just described. I doubt it very seriously.
No, and especially when you were the kind of player that he was, and you see your life through that same prism, where if you want to will it into being, it's almost as if you can. And he was able to do that through a good part of his basketball career. I'm sure it in part fueled him in taking on the challenge of playing professional baseball. Hey, I did it in basketball, why can't I do it in baseball? And I'm sure it probably fuels him, you know, as an owner and a player personnel director in the NBA. But, you know, just because you want that to happen doesn't mean you're going to make it happen in these different avenues of life. He didn't perform as well as he would have liked as a baseball player. I can't imagine he would say he's performed as well as he would like as a, you know, player personnel director and owner. I mean, the Hornets have had what, three winning seasons in 14 years since he's taken them over. So just because you were able to will it into being as a ball player doesn't mean you can do it in any other avenue of life.
Right. Mike Sielski, sports columnist, Philly Inquirer. Go check out his column on Jordan showing us who he really is. It's really good. I'm glad to have you on the show, man. We'll do it again, okay?
I would love to, Will. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I have said it could be a super conference. Forget Power Fives. If we're breaking this thing up, it's a super conference. 20? We'll argue about that. 20 or 25 teams. But the real question is, who's in and who's out? That's coming up on The Will Cain Show.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
All right, if we're creating a super conference for college football, we got to answer the question, who's in, who's out? I've got the list next here on The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Today on ESPN Daily, a deep dive into the newest way to get to the NBA, the G League's professional pathway. Adrian Wojnarowski on why top recruits might join and the impact on college hoops. That's ESPN Daily, presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily. Available wherever you enjoy your podcast. Hey, before I do this, Super League, Nuno, Bubba, Mike A, I think at this point it's fairly well established. I'm bad at last names, right? We just had Mike Sielski from the Philadelphia Inquirer here on the show. And I think I said his last name right every time. Did I? Did I do a good job?
You said his last name every time. I don't know if you said it right. You should just call him Mike.
Well, the other thing is that
Mike
I have read Mike and communicated with him, you know, just like through Twitter and all that, for a long time. But I've never had to say his name before outside of in my head. And this is what happens to me. Like if I read about an athlete, there was one recently. Well, there's honestly one every week, right? Where my first introduction to them is through text. And then I'll say it in my head. And if I choose to say it a certain way, I'm screwed. After that, like, I can't fix it. And I said Mike's last name, Sielski, in my head all the time, not Sielski. And so when Nuno told me it's Sielski, I'm like insecure every single time it comes out of my mouth. But, I think I stick the landing on Wojnarowski. Not that time, maybe. Adrian Wojnarowski.
Got in your head.
Yeah, got in my head. Dang.
And let me ask you a question.
Wojnarowski. Though. Wojnarowski. Boom.
When I tell you how
say to it, try it. You try it. No, say
no, that
it.
One's
say
actually really easy now. Adrian Wojnarowski.
Wojnarowski.
Yeah, a lot of people say it wrong.
They sure do. Yeah. Because if you look at it written out, you're like, this one's going to be a real adventure as I go.
Wojnarowski. That's what people try and say. But you just go Wojnarowski. Done.
Do it, Nuno.
Wojnarowski.
Hey, that's pretty good.
I think old Mike S. should have gone with a stage name. That's what he's messing up on.
But let me ask you a question. When you, like, I call Mike up and say, hey, Mike, you know, can we get the correct pronunciation of your last name? And then I provide it to you. Like
it doesn't matter.
No, I mean, but is there a part of your brain that says this? I'm getting this name from Nuno, so he's probably screwing it up as he's giving it to me.
No, I can hear you through the phone going, "Hey Mike, what did he say about? Hey Mike, can you tell us the proper way to say your name as opposed to the improper way?"
No, he said correct, and I said as opposed to the incorrect pronunciation.
Well, that happens on this show all the time.
Yes, it's difficult. I think to some extent we deserve a little bit of leeway here because some of these last names are difficult to pronounce.
And then we usually do this every single time.
Watch
we
this.
Have a segment after it where we call attention to it and we do 5 minutes on how badly you pronounced it.
Do we really? Watch this. Peregrine. Did I just do it, Bubba?
Yeah, you got it.
Like the Falcon?
Exactly.
Huh, look at
you
that.
Want to take a shot at the title?
Yeah. Good luck with this one.
You know I messed this one up for a long time. But the funny thing is, here's the problem. All I ever call Bubba is Bubba. I never say his last name, so I don't have to practice getting this
True.
Right. And Mike, you're Mike A. I never have to try to get this right.
No.
Antoniou.
No.
Really?
It's toe. There's a toe. Antoniou. Antoniou.
Antoniou?
Antoniou.
That's what I said.
I mean, I felt like Will got it.
I thought you said Antoniou. I thought he put like a TH in there. Maybe it was just maybe it's just my
guys.
Connection. I am at home. I am at home. Oh, now I'm just like a Nuno Teixeira.
I think one day coming up soon, I'm just gonna book everyone with a regular name. You know, a Smith, a Johnson, Jones.
Why is it regular? Why is that regular, Nuno?
Because you have issues. Like how many Passans? How many Passans?
Go ahead and explain your privilege.
Sports writers. Privilege?
Yeah, that's kind of a
privilege
weird.
Is that?
It was weird.
Teixeira's got a regular name.
All right. Let's move forward with college football cracking up. Everybody's talking today about the Power 5 conferences potentially leaving the NCAA. What I'm here to say is if they do, don't take it for granted the Power 5 conferences are all in this together because the whole concept of breaking away is about money. And I think if that happens, we need to start looking for an alignment of teams of similar values, that value being money. I could envision a super conference, a super league, not unlike European soccer, what they're talking about. The biggest programs across the English Premier League, La Liga in Spain, the Bundesliga in Germany, Serie A in Italy, all leaving their domestic leagues to join a super league in Europe. I could envision something like that in college football where every weekend is a ratings blockbuster. Every weekend is a big time contest. If you put together the 20 biggest programs in the United States, biggest revenue drivers, ratings drivers, merchandise sellers, and ticket sellers across the country into one conference. The way we talked about it is 20 teams, and I could be talked into 25, but 20 teams, two 10-division conferences or leagues or whatever, divisions inside the conference. Play all the teams in your division and then a few cross-divisional games. Who would get in? Well, here is the list of the biggest revenue-generating programs in college football. They go like this. Presumably, these teams would be in. Number one, the University of Texas. Number two, Texas A&M University. This is a list over a three-year rolling average of annual revenue and annual profit both. For what it's worth, it's $147 million in revenue and $94 million in profit for both of those. They're tied. And then you fill out the rest of the top 10 like this. Michigan, Alabama, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Georgia, Notre Dame, Florida, and Auburn. Those are your 10 biggest. And then, if you're making a 20-team league, which I think that you would then include LSU, Tennessee, Penn State, Oregon, Florida State. Now it gets a little hairier as you fill out the final five. South Carolina, Arkansas, USC, Washington, and Nebraska. That's the rolling average of most revenue over the last 3 years. Arkansas, interestingly, most money, worst team, went 2-10. There are a few borderline candidates here. For example, if you took a 1 year period, you'd have more teams in. And obviously there's some big ones left out. For example, Clemson came in 25th. So you'd argue for Clemson in, perhaps South Carolina out. And for those that just missed the cut, you're talking about teams in a 20-team. Iowa, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Mississippi, and Clemson. You're probably not going to have a Super League that doesn't include a team like Clemson at this point, but they don't generate the revenue that these other programs do. Not yet. They're on the rise. You could put into place, by the way, a relegation system as well, where some of the biggest from a previous year, like in soccer, make their way up and the worst make their way down. Because just outside the top 25, there's still more big programs like TCU, Miami, Utah, Virginia Tech, Baylor, on and on, Northwestern. These are your Minnesota. This is all predicated upon what Minnesota said about, hey, maybe the Power Five Conference could leave the NCAA. If they create a Super League, Minnesota's not there, not 25 deep. By the way, they came in at 26th. So you start the debate around South Carolina, Iowa, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Nebraska. There's your debate range, who's in and who's out. But I'm telling you, if they did this and they create a Super League and it was centered around money, you get to 15 very quickly. Where you're like, yep, that's 15 programs that are for sure in and will have a vested interest in playing in the same conference, being on the same television deals, playing each other on a rotating basis. A Super League would maximize interest and maximize revenue. The only debate is who gets in, who's 15 through 25. You can help out. 888-729-3776.